If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today, and so pleased to welcome her to the crossover, is Lakers owner Jeannie Buss. As you are no doubt aware, the Lakers are the subject of a new 10-part docuseries airing on Hulu. It's called Legacy, the true story of the LA Lakers. Jeannie is both a prominent figure in the series and an executive producer of the series. And yes, we discuss both aspects of that. It takes us through the modern history of the franchise, starting, of course, with her father's purchase of the team in 1979, taking us all the way through the 2020 championship. Always love chatting with Jeannie because she's about as open, as candid as you're going to get with an NBA owner. And she was definitely forthright on a whole range of issues, both past and present, in our conversation today, as you will hear. And I think the Hulu series, it's a must-watch for Laker fans and NBA fans in general. There's some new stuff here, some archival footage that I don't think we've seen before. There are present-day interviews peeling back the curtain just a little bit more. Definitely worth your time. And speaking of Laker history, and I swear this is just a happy coincidence, I'm very excited to share that Sports Illustrated and Triumph Books have collaborated on a new book about the Lakers called The Greatest Show on Earth, now available for pre-order and with a 30% discount, which I'll get to in a second. The book is a compilation of 15 stories from the pages of Sports Illustrated from the 60s all the way to the present, profiles of all the Laker legends, Magic, Kareem, Kobe, Shaq, Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, Wilt Chamberlain, and yes, of course, LeBron as well. And these are written by some of the best sports writers ever to grace the pages of SI and many of my sports writing heroes, frankly. Talking Frank DeFord, Gary Smith, Jack McCallum, Phil Taylor, Lee Jenkins, Chris Ballard, and others. I had the rare honor of writing the foreword for this book, which was a lot of fun. So you can now pre-order this book with a 30% discount. Here's what you do. Go to triumphbooks.com. Search for Greatest Show on Earth. There's also a direct link in the summary of this podcast episode. It's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/Lakers75. When you get to checkout, you use the discount code Lakers30. Again, triumphbooks.com, search for Greatest Show on Earth, or the bit.ly link, bit.ly/Lakers75, discount code Lakers30. If you're a Laker fan or you're just a fan of great sports writing, you'll love the book. I guarantee it. And never too early, by the way, to start that holiday shopping, right? So go check that out. Okay, all that out of the way, my conversation with Jeannie Buss is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to welcome the CEO and co-owner of the Lakers. To be clear, she will never, and her Twitter account will never, ask you for money. Jeannie Buss, how are you, Jeannie?
Hi, Howard. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I'm still waiting for my PS5 that your Twitter account promised. is that coming via UPS one of these days?
Honestly, that was a traumatic experience being hacked on Twitter, literally watching someone take over my account, post, that they were selling, that I was selling a PS5. And if you bought it from me, then I would enter you into a drawing to win Laker tickets. So it would sound a little bit authentic, you know, but me selling PS5s, that just doesn't sound right. But because people trust me and I am a verified account, you know, people did fall for the scam, and I'm dealing with, you know, people on a case by case basis. If they can show me that they were actually scammed out of the money, I'm trying to help them come up with a solution.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I make light of it because it's this weird stuff happens on Twitter all the time, but obviously there are serious consequences. And yeah, if I were in your position, like, I'd be a little freaked out about somebody, hijacking my account, and you don't know what else could happen. Were there any other ramifications of that before we get into obviously a lot of other more interesting fun things? But like, was anything compromised? Did you have to worry about like private DMs that could become public? Like, I don't know. So yeah, what else was it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that I was worried that they would reach out to my contacts through private messages and say, you know, horrible things, but they didn't. They were just out for the quick buck. And, you know, the thing is it's Twitter is not really set up to respond to those things quickly. So, I really had to find a solution as quick as I could. So the Lakers tweeted on their Twitter account that my account had been hacked. So then that helped get the word out amongst people who follow me that it was, a false, you know, someone had taken over my account. And so that kind of cleaned it up, but still it was very violating.
Yeah, no, that's freaky, a little scary. Glad that they got that resolved fairly quickly. Sometimes it takes days. So glad that got resolved. While we're on the subject of social media, on a lighter note, I know you're very close with Jay Moore, who I follow on Instagram. I need to know, why is he always putting his dog in a shopping bag? Is the dog okay? Does the dog like being in shopping bags? I'm not sure I get, there's probably an origin story of this this routine. I don't know what it is. I'm concerned for the small dog.
Well, I think anybody who hasn't seen it yet should go on Jay Moore's Instagram. but his dog, Mabel, who is 15 years old, because Jay's a stand-up comedian, she's traveled with him, you know, his entire career. And so when it's time to go somewhere, she'll just get into any bag because she wants to go. She's a traveling dog. And so any bag. And so if you accidentally leave a shopping bag on the floor and you can't find Mabel, she's inside the bag.
I love it. It's very cute. My cats will often climb inside my suitcase while I'm trying to pack. I don't think it's because they actually want to go with me or want to be zipped inside my rollerboard. But yeah, small animals and bags. There's something there. So Legacy, the true story of the LA Lakers, the Hulu series, several episodes in now, getting close to the halfway point. Jeannie, I mean, you and I have known each other a long time. I have written a bazillion stories about the Lakers. People have written a bazillion books about the Lakers. There have been documentaries and movies and slightly fictionalized versions, which we can maybe talk about. There's been no shortage of documentation of the Lakers. But here we are, a 10-part series that you and Linda Rambis executive produced. Why the need for this now, or this version of Laker history?
You know, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of when Dr. Buss passed away. And shortly after he passed away, we really, you know, just talking to people about explaining a lot of the innovations that he brought to the NBA that didn't exist before, how he priced tickets, how he sold sponsorship, how he introduced the Laker band, the Laker girls, you know, things that had never been done that a lot of people just take for granted, and not really understanding the origin. So, you know, it was a project that we talked about for a long time. It was, you know, probably 7 years in the making. And we wanted to tell the story really from when Dr. Buss bought the team, and reflect on the relationship that was unprecedented at the time, which was between Jerry Buss and his star player, rookie Magic Johnson. And, you know, it was ahead of its time. It was unusual because they're very different people, big age difference, but they found soulmates in each other. And they saw the game the same way. They wanted it to play the same way. And they brought out the best in each other. And that rookie season, they won a championship, which, you know, if you think about that now, how difficult a new owner, a new coach, and a rookie player all coming together and winning a championship in their first year. So, you know, and then there just is just so much, there's so much of a story that really you couldn't write the story arc, especially as it ends in 2020. So you have this kind of Magic coming in 1979 and then coming back again in 2017, helping the Lakers get back to championship level by getting the team back on track, attracting a free agent like LeBron James. So that's this perfect story arc. And when, you know, putting it together, then being able to get a director like Antoine Fuqua, who is a phenomenal storyteller, not only in documentary style, but also feature film. He was the right storyteller to kind of tie all the pieces together. And really, when you watch Legacy, you'll see it's almost like a motion picture.
Yeah. No, I've gotten that sense of it actually from what I've watched so far. And it's interesting, right? Because like I started covering your team in 1997 as a beat writer for the LA Daily News. So I was there for 7 years, but I came far after Showtime. And then the post-Showtime, let's call it, I don't know, mild malaise. It's some reassessing and it took a while to get going again. But so there's a lot that predates me. So it's fascinating for me to see and to hear like your dad's voice on audio. We don't always see him, but it's a lot of audio. Someone's got old audio tapes or something that were repurposed for the movie. So we hear him, we see him doing interviews back during a time when he was, you know, probably out in front of TV cameras a little bit more. By the time I started covering your team, you know, we'd see him once or twice a year. He'd sit down with the beat writers. So it was, even from my perspective as someone who covered your team for a while, it's going to a time and a place and a version of the NBA and of the Lakers that is it's the vault. And I'm curious about that too. So you're an executive producer along with Linda Rambis on this. Now that thing cuts two ways, right? We could talk about that, the criticism that can come with that, but you have access to people and archival footage and all kinds of resources that probably aren't available if someone did this independently. I was curious about that aspect of it because you can't tell from watching it, obviously, what's, you know, what's coming from where. Are you drawing from some stuff that was not previously public? Are we seeing in these first several episodes and in the episodes to come stuff that, like with Michael Jordan and The Last Dance, had been locked away?
Yeah, you're going to see, you know, in future episodes, there are things that people have never heard before. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, people say, well, you know, would your dad, how comfortable would your dad be with all of this? And, you know, my dad lived his life large, you know, he lived his, you know, he made no apologies for the, you know, the lifestyle that he led, and, you know, famously wearing blue jeans, you know, as opposed to suits. And, you know, he really chose his lane, and he was authentic in who he was. And I think this really just highlights more of a person that is a truly an American made story. You know, he came from very humble means and saw through education that he could kind of even the playing field, and then, you know, strategically put together real estate development, and, you know, turn that into, you know, one of the greatest franchises in all of sports in the Lakers. So, you know, he was very humble, so he'd probably be surprised that people would want to hear his story. So, you know, I would always tell my dad, you know, Dad, you don't understand, like, every guy wants to be you, like, everything that you do is, you know, you're fascinating and people want to know more. So I think he was hesitant about, you know, just in his humility, but I think he truly is an inspirational story.
For sure. And it was actually fascinating. I alluded to the audio tapes. That was the first thing that struck me, was hearing his voiceover with some black and white photos of his family from when he was small, and talking about their very, very poor, his very poor beginnings and that struggle. And that's something that I think I knew from his overall bio, read somewhere along the way, but I don't know that we ever heard him talk about it. At least, you know, in the years that I've been covering the league. And so that's a piece of it. I feel like, I'm curious, like, is that part of the motivation here? Like, the full story of your dad's ascent and revolutionizing the NBA in a lot of ways, it's been told in pieces. But I guess this is your opportunity, both as Lakers owner and as Jerry Buss's daughter, to make sure that you know, that this is told and preserved so that people understand the full scope of this.
Yeah, you know, you know, I think something that is very poignant about his story is that his father and mother divorced when he was just a baby. And eventually his mother remarried, but his stepfather would not adopt him. And then his mother and stepfather went on to have two more kids. So he was a bus in a family of Browns. Like, really, like, never fit in, never felt, you know, loved, included, I guess is the word. And so that's, you know, because of what he went through, like, the value that he put on making the Lakers and making the experience of Lakers inclusive. He wanted everybody to be a Lakers fan. That was really important to him. And that's the family that he created, that he didn't have growing up. Like, we're all equal. We're all Laker fans. And, you know, that, you know, that's a value that he instilled in me. And I like to think that, you know, I'm following in his footsteps when I say that the Laker Nation is a powerful thing, and we want everybody to be a Lakers fan.
It's funny you said it in that way, Jeannie, or frame it that way. It actually reminds me of a conversation I just had with Adam Silver a couple weeks ago about Bill Russell and his relationship with Bill Russell, and that Bill Russell would talk about the three-legged stool, which is that the players are one leg, the owners of the teams are another leg, and the fans are that third leg, and that they're all equally important and no one's above the other. And it sounds like that's kind of what your dad's approach to this was, and what your approach is as well, that it's kind of this, you can never, when it's sports, it's, this is not an average business, right? You have to think about who those paying customers are, who aren't just invested in the product, but are emotionally invested.
Right. But, and it wasn't, he wasn't creating a product to sell. He was creating a product that he would like, and like, everybody come with me, like, let's do this together. Let's have fun together. And I think that's the key, is he was a fan. So he wanted the fans to enjoy the games as much as he did.
So before we get too much further into a lot of the things about the series, I did want to just note this because, all right, look, I am coming at this as both somebody who loves watching the NBA and is fascinated by all things Lakers, having obviously covered the league and your team for a long time, but also I'm a journalist. And so the first thing I see when it's an executive produced by someone who's also a key central figure in the series itself, it's always that there's a little conflict of interest here, right? Like, that's my journalistic instinct. That is also, I think, for a number of people, fans and others watching it, there's going to be that, well, what are we really watching here if you've got final say on everything? So just in general, like, how do you address that? And this is, by the way, like, not unique to your series, of course. This was The Last Dance, which Michael Jordan had final call on. Kevin Garnett's documentary was executive produced by Kevin Garnett. I was interviewed for that, so I was a participant. It cuts both ways to me, because on the one hand, there is the natural grain of salt, but there's also the, you have access to resources and people that might not participate in something like this otherwise if it were being done independently. So maybe we're getting more as the viewing public than we would have. I as you can hear, like, I obviously have some mixed feelings about that structure of it. I would always prefer the independent version. I'm a reporter. That's how I'm wired. How did you feel about that, and about any concerns from us, the viewing public?
Well, I appreciate your concerns. You know, you are a journalist, and so, I mean, we have the perfect way to compare. And that's because of the show on HBO called Winning Times that we did not have any control over, and we had nothing to do with, had no final say. When I heard about that project, I thought, oh, it can't get made. Or if they make it, they can't use the Laker logos. You know, I've really had a lesson in, you know, how copyrights and things can be ignored if they are portraying, you know, a true story or a true incident, something that really happened, and that they are not purposely getting it wrong or trying to defame any of the characters. And as we know, they got a lot wrong in that series. So I guess you could say, if I wasn't involved, you may be hearing a story, but how accurate is it? Or you can, you know, watch our story told by us. And I think you'll see as this goes along that we don't shy away from taking on any subject that is relevant to the story that we're telling. And, you know, this is, you know, it's very family centric because of my family. So there may be Laker fans that are like, I don't even pay attention to who owns the team. I just want to hear about the basketball. So I would say they probably wouldn't be that interested in the family stuff. But as I've seen HBO put on a show that, you know, reflects, you know, members of my family, and you know, I guess there is an appetite for hearing about these stories. So we felt that it was important to tell our story our way. This project was way in the works before the Winning Times show ever came about. So it isn't in response to that. But I think that, you know, if you're a fan of the Lakers and you kind of know the history and you know the high points and the low points, this will just illuminate more of what was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I know it's a sore spot for a lot of people within the broader Laker family there, the HBO Winning Time show. Have you, like, so, like, your feelings are well known on this, but I am curious, like, did you watch some of it out of curiosity? Is your reaction from having seen it, or just from everything you've heard about it? Because is it actually tough to watch, I guess, through your prism?
No, I mean, I'm not here to endorse it. So people can make their own choice, watch it or don't watch it. I don't care. I watched it because I miss my dad. I think John C. Reilly did an amazing job portraying my dad. I think they got some things wrong. They took him on a different path, more like, you know, like sex and basketball and, you know, like the 70s, right? It seemed a little bit out there. But, you know, they did a lot of research in that every time the Jerry Buss character talked to the character based on me, they used my real nicknames, because I had years ago on Twitter, wrote what, you know, my favorite nicknames were, like, growing up or whatever. And so I listed the nicknames. And so they use, like, you know, my dad would call me Jeannie Marie or Jeannie Beanie or, you know, Jeannie Pie. Like, and so to hear that, you know, a voice saying that, it just, you know, it, I miss my dad. And I love the forum, looks amazing. And, you know, there's just parts of it that are fun to relive and, you know, parts that are just completely inaccurate. And, you know, but, you know, I guess for drama's sake, they had to change timelines and change characters and put into one character maybe three different people. And, you know, that's artistic license that they took. It's different. And I know, you know, you brought up Jay Moore at the beginning of our discussion, and he is, you know, I'm in a relationship with him and he's an actor. And when he reads for a part, he doesn't think about like the other side of it. Like, you know, he's a working actor. He wants to work and he'll take a job if the script is good. And so I don't blame the actors for taking the parts. And, you know, like I said, you know, when John C. Reilly came to a game before the series aired, and they bought seats from somebody, and he was sitting on the floor. And I made my way over to say hello to him and introduce myself. And he literally thought I was going to throw him out. He said, he was like, his mouth dropped. And when he saw me, and he goes, you know, honestly, I thought you were going to tell me to leave. And I go, no, I wouldn't do that. What I wanted to share with you is that my dad and I, one of the favorite things that we would do outside of sports was we love to go to movies. And I'll never forget seeing the movie Chicago, and John C. Reilly had a part in it. And my dad, after the movie, said, I think he's going to win an Oscar for this, because he, you know, like when a funny guy plays sad, he played a poignant character as a supporting actor in that film. I said, so, you know, my dad was a fan of yours, and I think he would have gotten a kick out of you playing him. So. And he really appreciated that.
That's very cool. And he did get to stay for the rest of the game.
Of course, I don't kick people out. As long as their ticket is like a legitimate ticket and it isn't bootlegged, you know?
So it's fun. Sorry. When I hear you talk about your dad, and you and I have discussed him before in previous podcasts, you know, your affection for your dad always comes through so strongly. This series, from what I've seen of it so far, does feel like in some places a love letter to your dad and about what he built, what he provided for all of you to take on, and the path that he laid. And so that part of it, like, I think it's both informative and emotionally endearing. Like, it comes through strong. But there's a lot of basketball laced in there too. So, like, I do think that people will find whatever piece of it they're most interested in. I think it's all there. So, okay, as an executive producer, do you end up are you going through it with the filmmakers as they're editing, as they're deciding what stays and what goes? And I'm not asking for sake of like, did you spike anything? Although I'm sure that question could be asked too, but like more about they're doing the interviews. You're not sitting in on all of these, I'm sure. Did you actually learn anything? You've lived all of this, but did you learn anything? Because these are new interviews. These are, you know, bits of archival footage that maybe you weren't present for in the course of putting this together and being an EP on it. Did you learn anything new about your own kind of your life story, the Lakers life story?
I did. Well, let me answer the first question. In terms of the director, it was in the director's hands. I wasn't a part of any of the interviews. And, you know, there may have been a couple things that I suggested or wanted to kind of talk through so that he would understand, you know, my thought process on things. But I never overruled him. I deferred to him, and, you know, he's an excellent storyteller, and he could see, you know, things that I couldn't. I was too much like this, and he was still trying to make a story that would kind of all come together. And I think he's done an excellent job. Let's see, the second part of the question was, did I learn anything? Absolutely. I think what struck me the most are the interviews of players who were traded away from the Lakers, and what, you know, like going back and that those feelings and those emotions are still there, and them articulating what that felt like. Then hearing about from players who were traded to the Lakers, and then how that changed their lives, and how the pressure of being a Laker and what that was. So these are people's and you know, these are people who have lived this life, and we're hearing from them, from their mouths. They're going back and feeling those same emotions that they did that the day they found out they were traded to or traded from the Lakers. And I think fans will be excited to see, you know, players that don't get talked about a lot in Laker land. And, you know, so I did learn a lot.
Yeah. Let me just ask, like, were there any hard lines about you can't go here or don't go down this road? And we haven't seen, obviously, the public, we have not seen the full series yet. So it won't be until we've seen all 10 episodes that people might say, oh, you know what? They leaped over this part, or they only spent 1 minute on this particular controversy. Like the critiques that may be of what is and isn't there probably won't happen until we've seen the full thing. So I'm speaking hypothetically in some ways, but were there any things where you were like, you know what? We just don't need to go down this path too far.
There was nothing that we shied away from. But if you want me to come back on your show after everything's aired, and then you can say, hey, whatever happened to this or that, then, you know, then you can put me on the hot seat and I'll answer any questions. I think you'll find that everything is included in this.
I'm sure. I mean, listen, I will just say this, having known you for a long time too, and you and I having had many both interviews and just chit chat over the years, like, you're pretty open. You're not one who shies away from much. So my benefit of the doubt in this case, I can't speak to the last answer or anything else, but in this case, I'm thinking, yeah, you probably would just say, just go for it and take it where it goes. But yeah, I'll reserve the right to reassess after seeing all 10 episodes, and I will take you up on the offer to come back if there are some outstanding questions there, which there might be. I think I've you and I've discussed this before, but there's because of some of the scenes that I saw in the episode so far, I wanted to ask this. Your dad's philosophy about the way to run a team, about the way to relate to players, about the distance to still keep from players. Like, he's tight with Magic Johnson, but you also have to navigate this whole thing where there's a front office and a coach that you don't want to undermine, right? So I'm curious about the way he navigated those things and the template that then provided that maybe you're following now. Like, how did your dad do both things, be close to Magic Johnson and build this dynasty with him in the 80s, but at the same time, not get so intertwined in the day-to-day of basketball that it might muck things up, right? Because coaches and GMs and players, like, everybody's got egos in this league, and everybody feels a little insecurity if all of a sudden the owner's coming down from the executive suite and having conversations. So how did you see your dad navigate that, and how has that given you the guidelines for it?
You know, he felt that without Magic Johnson, you know, the Lakers wouldn't have been the Lakers. So he felt that Magic, you know, was in a category of his own, not just your star player, but, you know, somebody that helped build a brand that, you know, my dad benefited from. That's how Magic ended up becoming a part owner of the team, of which he later sold. But, you know, Magic was Magic. And I think my dad just made no apologies for, you know, that special place that Magic held in the organization. You know, I take a page out of his book in terms of, you know, being a team that is collaborative with our star player, you know, and trying to foster a close relationship, because he looked at Magic as a partner in winning, and that it was important to, you know, if this is the person that's going to lead your team, then you want to make sure that they have a team around them and a coach coaching them that is going to make sure that he can succeed. And you put all your resources that way.
So kind of, a decent comparison to your dad's relationship with Magic, I would say, was your relationship with Kobe Bryant, who was not just a star player for your franchise, but a confidant and someone who you sought out for counsel even after he had retired. But those things are rare. I don't know how many examples of that exist around the NBA right now. So this is not to set too high a bar of your dad and Magic, or you and Kobe, or some other examples of this. Maybe Mark Cuban and Dirk had some of that. But LeBron's been there a very short time, and he came in toward the end of his, I shouldn't say toward the end. I don't know when the end is. He's going to, the guy's indestructible. He's going to play another 20 years, but what appeared to be, the final chapter and toward the end. So it's a little bit different because he's not growing up with the franchise or growing with you, as an owner of the team. But I get the sense that you guys have kind of formed your own relationship over these last few years. I don't want to compare it again to Magic or to Kobe, but how has that evolved? How do you define the way that you and LeBron work together? Is it at all analogous to you and Kobe or your dad and Magic?
Oh, I think every individual is different, but with LeBron, we have, a line of communication between the two of us, and he knows, you know, that he can reach me anytime and vice versa. And, I think he feels appreciated. I know I appreciated that he signed an extension to stay here and, continue to, lead the Laker team. He's a fantastic leader, both on and off the court. And, I feel like we're blessed to have him as a Laker. I want to see him retire as a Laker. We have, you know, something that is coming up, which is he will probably become the all-time leading scorer in the history of the NBA, which would break Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record, which I'll never forget when he did that. And Chick Hearn said, "This is a record that will never be broken." And here we are, somebody who is going to break it in a Laker uniform. And that that has a lot of meaning to the organization and to me personally. Yeah.
No, it's wild. I mean, Chick wasn't wrong to say that at the time. Like, it's taken a long time, and I don't think most of us thought it would happen. And I don't think most of us thought it would be necessarily LeBron, right? Because he's also a playmaker, and he was always this amalgamation of Magic and Michael and all this. But I don't, 10 years into LeBron's career, I don't think people were thinking this was going to happen. In fact, I remember when it was Kevin Durant, like, ooh, the trajectory he's on and as great a scorer as he is, maybe Kevin Durant will be the one to surpass Kareem. But here it is. It's LeBron. It's almost certainly going to happen, and it's going to happen in a Laker uniform, which is incredible since it's Kareem who held it. I can only imagine all of the planning for that that's going on in your marketing business wing for the next few months preparing for that. That will be quite a moment. And for the whole league, you don't see those records fall very often. So was that relief? Was the extension a relief? Like, you don't, with LeBron, we never know, right? He signed a series of one-year deals for a while. There's all this speculation about what else he could do. There was an assumption when he came to you guys a few years ago that he would finish his career in LA, but it's, LeBron has not charted a career path like any other that's preceded a player of his stature. How nervous are you until the moment that he decides, hey guys, I'm signing up for another 2 years?
Oh, I was very concerned because I want him to retire as a Laker. So I was very happy that he was happy to sign it. And, you know, now we can just take it off the table and focus on, this upcoming season with a new coach in Darvin Ham and, hopefully get back on track.
Let me touch on that just briefly. We'll get back to the legacy series in a second too. But as long as we're on this note, you had given an interview to Bill Plaschke of the LA Times, the all-time great Bill Plaschke, back in May. And this is in the wake of obviously a very disappointing season for you guys. The playoffs are going on without you. And you were very frank, as you often are, in saying, like, I'm not happy about where things are. This is a really important offseason. We are speaking now in September, and the roster, there's been some additions here and there. I would say more around the edges, not anything fundamental, no fundamental changes. I won't ask you about specific players or whether they're coming or going. But not much else has changed. Are you satisfied to the extent of what your feelings were in May about the way that season went and where you are on almost the eve of training camp here about where the Lakers are now?
Well, hiring a new coach is a big move. This Darvin Ham was an assistant coach here under Mike Brown and Mike D'Antoni. And so he's familiar with our organization. I think he is a strong voice that we need. And I think he's going to do great things, but, he's got to be given the time and the resources in order to put a team together that can compete for a championship. Like that's what our goal is. Certainly we have changed a lot of players on the roster, but they're not they're names that Laker fans will get to know as they watch them play in a Laker uniform. And, I have confidence that Darvin will be able to get the best out of them and, keep taking steps towards being a competitive team. And, you can't win a championship if you're not in the playoffs. So we got to get back into the playoffs before we can start talking about what we need to win a championship. And, last year at this time, people were very, very optimistic about our, core group of players in Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James. And we never really got to see them play together. I think they played 11 games where they were all completely healthy. So, you can't really, predict what's going to happen when, we don't really have a sample size. So I'd like to see that group, come together with the addition of Pat Beverly, just have an opportunity to show us what they can do.
Yeah. All fair. And I will say that Darvin Ham, I mean, it's hard to find anybody around the league who's not very high on Darvin Ham and his prospects as a head coach. So that's a not insignificant thing. There are some personnel and roster issues that I will not bore you with, or not bore you. I will not burden this interview.
I'm not the right person to ask. Bring in our basketball people, and then you can ask all the questions.
When Rob comes on the podcast, I'll grill him about some deals and non-deals. A few more before I get you out of here. But it's interesting watching the series so far. Pardon if this has been alluded to too often, but your family sometimes strikes people as an episode of Succession. You had a very public battle with your brothers a few years back, more than a few years now, for control of the team. They tried to oust you. You essentially, you won that battle and essentially, I would say in some respects, exiled them. But Jimmy Buss and Johnny Buss are in this series. Jerry West, who has had some tensions with your franchise, is in this series.
Well, Mitch Kupchak, those are your words, not mine.
My words. You can correct them if necessary. But I mean, Jerry West is in there. Mitch Kupchak is in there. So, to the extent that people were viewing this series as well, it's being executive produced by Jeannie Buss, that this is not going to go down certain paths. These guys are in there. And after everything that was said, so I think it's a credit to the filmmakers and to all of you that everyone was willing to talk about it. I assume this also means we're getting an episode sometime down the road here before this concludes, where it's going to get into you versus Jimmy and Johnny and that whole saga.
Yeah, and that's important because when Jimmy was running the basketball, he was making decisions that he thought were best for the business. He thought that, it wasn't. You'll hear him explain what he was trying to do. And the thing is that it didn't follow what Dr. Buss laid out, which he always wanted the Lakers to be competitive, that, and here we were while Jimmy was running the team year after year after year being at the bottom of the standings. And that, me being on the business side, we had just signed a new television agreement, local carriage with, Time Warner Cable, which became Spectrum. And, in those negotiations, Jimmy wasn't part of any conversation. And when you're having those conversations, they asked me, they said, "We know how the Lakers have operated the last 25 years. Will you operate the team the same way the next 25 years?" And, of course, I'm going to continue to run the Lakers as my dad ran them. Well, when my dad passed away and Jimmy took over, I couldn't recognize Laker basketball. And accepting, the losing was just not what our fans would come to expect. And certainly hurtful because it was the last years of Kobe Bryant's career. And certainly he had the Achilles injury, you can argue whether he came back from it, the same player or not. To me, Kobe would have, figured out something else to do on the court to try to win. Kobe wanted to win. And kind of watching him surrender to knowing that he was going to lose is very painful for me. And, maybe I should have intervened sooner than I did. And, of course, we have to relive the entire, it's going to make me cry again. The entire, episode with my brother where he approached Phil about coming back after they let Mike Brown go early in a season, in November of that season. They let Mike Brown go. My brother came to me and said, "Hey, do you think Phil would come back?" And I said, "I don't want to get in the middle of you two again. You go ask him. It's up to you. I don't care, And so they went through this whole entire charade of possibly hiring Phil, and Phil was going to take the job, but he had to get medical clearance from his doctors. And then the midnight phone call where they said, oh, we've hired Mike D'Antoni. And, you know, Phil's agent was on his way to sign the contract, on his way from Chicago to LA to sign the contract. So that was just, you know, I think about what could have been if Phil had come back that year, how things might have been different. You know, Kobe was playing over 40 minutes a game under Mike D'Antoni. And, you know, is that what led to his Achilles injury? You know, had Phil come back, you know, we still had Powell. Dwight Howard was on the team. You know, Phil would have been a better coach for Dwight. You know, we ended up, you know, Kobe gets injured. We get swept in the first round by San Antonio, and that's it. And then we go on this, you know, slide downwards. So, you know, what my father had asked of me before he passed away was to keep the Lakers, you know, I like to say my dad had his children, but the Lakers were the baby. And he asked me to take care of the baby. And not only did he ask me that, he wrote it into the trust that I was to run the team. And what my brothers were trying to do was to circumvent his orders, his wishes, and, you know, take me out of the position I was in. So, you know, we'll hear about that. And yes, it is, like, even though I don't watch Succession, because it would make me very anxious. You know,
it's a really good series.
I think I've met Cousin Greg. He comes to Laker games and he's very popular with the fans. But, you know, it's clear what my dad wanted for the Lakers. And so I can't do anything less than do my best to fulfill his wishes. And that's what legacy really is all about. And, you know, but Jimmy, in Jimmy's words, he'll tell you he felt that he was doing things the right way, and that, you know, being at the bottom of the standings would mean we would get at the top of the draft. But, you know, as we all know, when you get those draft picks, it takes years for them to get to a level where they can carry a team. And when you're young all together, you know, it's, you know, who's going to lead a bunch of young kids? Like, they're just, they need the veterans to teach them how to, you know, learn how to be a professional. And, you know, now I'm sounding a little bit like Phil Jackson, but, you know, definitely Phil Jackson's one of my influences. So, you know, I guess I'm kind of rambling here, but you'll see all of that in the future episodes.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think that underscores the fact that you're not, this series is not steering away from anything. Your brothers are in it. You guys are going to discuss this in a way that probably none of us have heard yet in that episode, which I think everyone looks forward to seeing among other, you know, pieces of this whole saga. So as I saw Jimmy and Johnny appear, though, in the earlier episodes, it did strike me, okay, they participated in this, and this is a project that you're leading. Can we read anything into that? Has there been some mending of relationships over the last few years? Does their participation indicate anything? You may have differences about what happened, but does it indicate anything about where your family relationships are now?
Yes, this was a very healing project for my siblings and myself. And, you know, I think that's a positive. So yes, it's been a good thing for my family.
And then just a couple of quick things before I get you out of here. I thought it was really interesting hearing you and, you in the present and your dad from archival footage talking about the reports that he was in financial trouble. You actually say at one point, in the present, that the 1989 championship that at the end of that, or the, excuse me, 1989 loss to the Pistons, that whole season had been really stressful because you thought you might lose the team. And I'm not sure, again, this may be because of my late coming to the NBA beat and to LA, but I don't recall knowing anything about that. So that was a really interesting, and I think that was in the third episode. stuff like that, I think, is really fascinating. And again, I think is a credit to all of you that this is these are some places that you didn't have to go with this, and some vulnerable moments for the family and the franchise. And I thought it was interesting to see that. And then just some fun stuff along the way, like seeing all the old 80s footage and seeing there's a Judge Wapner plotline mixed in here. There's a Donald Sterling appearance that does not have anything to do with the Clippers. Flea is in there. I love the Red Hot Chili Peppers, so always good to see Flea. Footage of you and Linda Rambis in Russia in the 80s doing some negotiations. Like, just really interesting little tidbits along the way that are not strictly basketball related, but are just of the time or of the moment. So that was kind of fun. Anything else like that we can look forward to? Little odd cameos or anything?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, and some things like they really do warm your heart, you know? And I think Laker fans are going to enjoy, I was excited that, Paul Westhead, did an interview, because we never hear from him, you know, and of course, Pat Riley is so, you know, articulate and fascinating, and he's still fascinating, and just him kind of talking about, you know, what led to him leaving, you know, and so there's way more to come, a lot more to unfold. So keep watching.
Okay. And one quick one along those lines in that the later time frame, because this starts with the Showtime years, but goes all the way through, I assume, the 2020 championship. Yes.
Yes.
So there is. So I had on the podcast a few weeks ago, I don't know if you heard it, Joe Dumars came on, and we talked about the near trade that he thought he had for Kobe when he was running the Pistons. And in Joe's telling, I'm just curious your recollection of this, just to complete the series here. He says the deal was done and that your father had basically agreed to it, but Kobe's got a no trade clause. I've got to go to him and get him to sign off. And Kobe said, I need a couple of days. I need to talk to my family. I need to consider this. This was in 2007, of course, when Kobe was feeling like he wanted out. And your dad said, we can't wait that long. So he basically put a 24-hour deadline on it. And at the end of 24 hours, Kobe hadn't given him an answer. And so Jerry Buss went to Dumars and I think to Davidson, the Pistons owner, and said, sorry, it's off. But in Dumars' sense, and he knows, he's a veteran of this stuff, nothing's done till it's done, but the deal was agreed to. All it needed was Kobe's sign-off or for Kobe to come to a conclusion on it. What is your own recollection of that from where you were sitting then?
Well, you know, let's see, we've heard Mark Cuban say he thought he had Kobe. Then we've heard Chicago thought they had Kobe. Then the Clippers thought they had Kobe. So, I mean, yes, I think that his, you know, when losing did not sit well with Kobe. And, you know, so that, you know, first year after Phil left, you know, things didn't go well. They Rudy Tomjanovich had to step down after 3 months of, you know, Kobe losing. He couldn't take it. I don't really know why he stepped down, but he stepped down. And then, you know, there was, you know, an opportunity for Phil to come back. And then Phil comes back and, you know, we lose in the first round of the playoffs to Phoenix. And, you know, it was really kind of like, well, what's going to change that, you know, we're going to be able to get back into that contention. And in the meantime, Shaq winning a championship, I think, you know, really lit the fire under Kobe. And same with Phil. Like, Phil did not like losing in the first round. He said, I'd rather not make the playoffs than lose in the first round. It's like, it's really hard. You know, I think Kobe applied pressure that, ended up, if he would have been traded, I guess that would have been a disappointment. But I know my dad, and my dad figured out something and, you know, was able to make a move and get Pau Gasol. And I think in particular, that trade was so kept so under wraps that had it leaked out, there's no way that you know, certain teams would have let Powell come to the Lakers. They would have tried to hijack the trade, offer more than what we were offering. But, you know, the trade was announced and that's it. There was no leak or anything. And then Powell coming to the Lakers, of course, you know, just he just took off from day one. He and Kobe were meant to play together. And you know, that's an exciting thing this season is that we're going to be retiring Powell's jersey at a game. So I think that it was real that Kobe was applying pressure. Now, whether he really wanted to leave, I don't think so. And I think as it proved to be, you know, a very rewarding experience for him to stay and win with, you know, essentially a new group of people. And that kind of cemented, you know, you got 8 and you got 24, and they both numbers deserve to be in the Hall of Fame with the respective careers. So, you know, everything worked out the right way. And I'm sorry, Joe Dumars, if your hopes were up, but he was meant to be a leader.
Fair enough. Before I let you go, I know you've got another good big project coming soon. WOW Women of Wrestling. That's a revival of sorts, right? Like, tell us about that.
Yeah, it's, you know, some people remember the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling from the 80s. We've evolved it and it is now WOW Women of Wrestling. And this is a personal project. This isn't a Laker project. This is my own personal funds that I've invested. I knew people would look to me about what I'm doing in women's sports. And there's so many great female athletes because of Title IX. There's all these collegiate athletes who have kind of dedicated, you know, their lives, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old to become Division I athletes. And, you know, unless you're going into the WNBA or a professional tennis player, there's not a lot of places for women to go and be performers, be athletes, and be discovered. And to me, this was a good formula to bring in these amazing athletes who have outstanding personalities. And what's different in WOW is, first of all, it's the only all-female wrestling crew, but they're characters. They're, you know, people like The Beast or Jungle Girl or Voodoo Doll or Holly Dead, you know, like they're very much in their characters, but they're inspired by their own personal stories. So there's this thread of authenticity. And I'm just really proud of it. It premieres September 17th in syndication. So please check your local listings for WOW Women of Wrestling and let me know what you think. You know, but again, this is about giving women athletes an opportunity to earn a living and perform, you know, and show off their skills.
Fantastic. I've never been a pro wrestling aficionado, but I will have to check that out for sure. Sounds like a lot of fun. Jeannie, this has been fantastic. You've been so generous with your time. Thank you, as always, for everything. Appreciate it. And when this series is over, I will definitely invite you back on if we have anything else to parse out, discuss about the details. But I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of it.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Jeannie Buss. Thanks to today's producer, pinch hitting on short notice, Harry Swartout. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.